This week on RSBNB Update, we run through the changes to the player-owned farm, and it can now become a huge supplemental to farming experience. Also, Skillers win in the Mining and Smithing Showcase with reworked drop tables and Tier 90 and Tier 92 smithable power armor. This is RSBNB Update, episode 688, recorded Thursday, September 13th, 2018. Skillers win. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSBNB Update. Tannis and myself are in this week, as we are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thanks, Shane.
The wonderful world of RuneScape has struck again in what appears to have been a patch week, but, you know, this week is going to be a week that I think lots of people are going to be happy about, regardless of what how you felt about this week's update, because there are some things later on in our rundown that, you know, we've been waiting for to hear about for a long, long time. And, you know, that might be the Mining and Smithing content showcase, or it might be something else. So, anyways, we're going to get going here, and we're just going to talk RuneScape. So, RuneScore high scores and patches. This is apparently the only high score table you can get first on still in game, first page.
Yeah.
So. And you know, we had the achievement system in game for over a year now, and here we are, RuneScore finally on the high scores table. I don't really have much to say about this except for the fact that it's here. You know, I think the hardcore Ironman tables are very interesting too. Have you had a chance to look at those?
I haven't looked at the Ironman.
Okay.
The Ironman ones. Yeah.
Okay. You know, when Jagex put this out, we normally question whether or not they're going to put these tables on the light high scores API, which is what fan sites are supposed to use. And I say supposed to in air quotes, because there have been fan sites in the past who haven't. That's what fan sites are supposed to use to obtain their data, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this week, they put this in. They put this in the middle of the file rather than at the end. And for anyone who's done anything to do with text formatting or parsing, you'll know that that's absolutely painful when that happens and no one says what went on. So basically, what we're seeing now is that some of our other rankings that we've been storing, not the skill ranking, thankfully, but pretty much every other ranking that we have on the RSBNB high scores has been shifted out of whack due to this and a number of other changes that have been made over time. We just realized that this week, so we're gonna fix that eventually, but it's a pain. It's a pain. So that's one thing that, you know, could have been communicated better to fan sites on this. I'd also like to point out that if you look at the hardcore Ironman high scores, and you look on the first page here, you see a gentleman by the name of iHerblaw, who is part of Clan Quest. So we have one of the Clan Questers here, rank 15 out of everyone who plays a hardcore Ironman on these high score tables.
Wow, and they're in Clan Quest, huh?
Yep. Yeah.
Cool.
And I think the, let's see, I forget what the total achievement number is, but there's over, 1900 achievements in game. Can you believe that? 1980 achievements in game with a total possible rune score of 21,840. I'm still below 10K. How are you?
I don't know. Probably slightly above that. I don't even know.
Yeah, and you know, you see that there's these things that you can do, and you can do achievements, and, you know, I don't know if that's the true end game with them adding this high score table, is everyone completing all the achievements?
I mean, I guess it could be, but, I mean, a lot of us are busy with 120s or comp or things like that, so...
Yeah.
I mean, if you have all that stuff done...
I guess that's then, what you know, do.
Yeah, I guess that's what you would do, yeah.
And they say, we've added the rune score to the game on August 29th of 2017. I think you were on for that update when they redid the high score update, right?
think so. Yeah.
And then, of course, we know what happened earlier in that year. April, they put the first version out. It needed a lot of work. And here we are a year later. We get the high score table. So
I was not on that one, thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah. That was a painful episode. That was a painful episode for me and Sirion.
I know. It's like, oh, give this guy a drink. He's going to need one after the show.
All right. So let's move on to the patch notes with that being said, because there's a number of things that did indeed make it to patch for the player-owned farm this week, and these ones are going to be rather consequential, I feel, with this. So the servants have come back from their brief holiday, although they're not too happy about the farm that's just moved in. And I'm guessing this is referring to the servants that were in place at the old farm there. Just disappeared.
Yeah.
So there's some nice attention to detail there. If you got a black egg from the Queen Black Dragon and it was unchecked, it will now appear in its correct form. I don't know what that means. Maybe it was appearing as checked. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Beehives now have a right-click option to display what flowers they have stored inside. Attribute boosting honey at the POF player on farm is now produced at a faster rate. Players can now walk away from beehives to stop collecting special honey. So that's a suite of beehive fixes that were brought in, and, you know, people were concerned about beehives not working correctly. And I can confirm at this point the beehives just work. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you should definitely use them. I think the happiness honey is best probably to go with. Just because that increases the chance of your animals reproducing if that's what you're going for. So.
Yeah. Although, like, the health is probably pretty good, too, just because I have trouble getting my animals, like, up in the health. They're never more than,
50
or something, you know? Like, I don't get it.
You know, I've never needed – I've never had any issues with them being below 100% health. So and they've
how does that
and they've just reproduced fine. So I'm not sure what's going on with that, what the threshold is. But there have been no issues with, you know, the ones that weren't in the breeding pen, keeping them disease free. They actually stay disease free, I find, as long as there's food in there.
Mm.
They end up being happy enough. So I'm not sure what's on with that. But yeah. So.
See, and I thought like maybe it's. Has to do with the kind of food you're feeding them, but
no, because it all goes down to mush of one kind or another.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've still got a lot to learn.
Yeah, I think I'm progressing quite well. I cashed in some dragons and I bred my first red dragons. For some reason, two blue dragons produced a red dragon egg.
Oh, hey. That's cool.
I don't know how that happened, you know. But there you go. The floor from upstairs of the Servants Guild has been reinstalled, and luckily the builders ignored the Ardoian health and safety rules. You know, I just put this one in here because it's a funny one. It doesn't affect any mechanics, but hey, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Any new rabbits you breed will now be bankable and tradable. There were some very strange cases where if you kept your original tutorial rabbits in the breeding pen, then a majority of other bred rabbits would be classed as tutorial ones and therefore not be bankable or tradable. Apologies, but this fix will only tend to new rabbits. You have to sell any other untradable ones you might have in a pen to the rabbit buyer.
Huh, that didn't happen to me, but I kept the tutorial rabbits in the breeding pen, like... So,
I actually sold the tutorial rabbits and just went straight on to chickens.
Yeah, I just did rabbits, but I'm hunting chachumpas now. So
okay,
yeah,
yeah. Hopefully. That small pen a use for something, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Noted flowers can be used on the beehives to create special honey. So if you have a collection of marigolds, you can do that rather than just doing however many you pull out of your herb run or your allotment run at the time. That's good. Now, here's the big one. Players can now purchase an upgrade that allows animals to breed inside small, medium, and large pens. But there's a gotcha with this one. It's not the same level of success chance that the breeding pen has, and it doesn't have failure mitigation. So, basically what this means is that you're still going to have a chance to breed in those pens, but it's going to be lower than if you use the dedicated breeding pen.
That's that's still better than nothing, though.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, even if – and this is, I think, where keeping the happiness up and the health up, because, you know, happiness, the joyful, is what makes the animal more likely to reproduce, right? So if you use that kind of honey on the animal and you keep the health up inside the standard pen, you'll have a higher chance of triggering the reproduction of those animals. And this is where I think the farm gets really interesting, because when it comes down to it, you can only farm one new dragon per day, right? And the way the growth cycles work is that the dragons are, you know, every day they grow up by one tick, and you want to get them to adolescent to sell them. So in theory, if you're able to make this work, you'll potentially, if everything, if all the stars align, you'll be able to breed two new dragons a day, or sorry, three new dragons a day, one in the pen and one in the two of the large pens, if you're able to get these things to tick off. And I don't think that you'll be seeing the large pens tick off every day, just because of the way the chance works, because the max breeding time for a dragon before it'll reproduce is 90 hours, but it does have a success chance of 80%, according to research that's been done and data that's been gathered. So I think what we're seeing here is the expansion of the farm in the way that will allow the medium and the large pens to truly take off, in that, you know, you're going to always have an adolescent dragon coming in at least one a day, right? And if you take them all the way up to elder, you're going to get that farming XP coming in as well if you want to do that. So in the meantime, when you're trying to get your beans going, I think the best course of action is just going to be to load up your medium and large pens with zygomites and dragons and sell them off every day for beans.
Yeah, that's been my my quest.
Because once you do that, you're going to be able to focus on experience. And after you focus on experience, then you're going to be seeing, like we ran through last week, if you end up start selling, you know, two elders a day, let's just say two, but at least one, you're going to be pulling in upwards of 200K plus farming XP from this farm every day.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah.
So, and, you know, the key part is that you got to take into account that you got to get – you basically got to have eggs coming out every which way, and then you got to make sure that every day you're going to have a dragon going to elder, because the time from adolescent to elder is something like 3 days, or adult to elder is like 3 days. So you want to have everyone staggered like that, and then assuming you're able to get that staggering and get those eggs coming out like that, then you're going to see the XP come in. And that's where I think this farm has been truly underestimated with what people were expecting from it, you know, because each of those elder dragons that you gather produce from is 90K XP a day. So is what makes the farm, you know, from just a supplemental to farming to something that everyone who is going for 120 or, you know, if you want to go for 200 mil farming should definitely do. So, but these upgrades are also expensive. I think it costs 1,000 for the chance for them to breed inside the small pens, 3,000 beans for the medium pens, and 7,000 for the large pens.
That's a lot of beans.
Yes, it is. So if you want to go for this upgrade to have a higher breeding chance, that's probably what kind of what you want to spend your beans on. So I'll have more information on this after I get my dragon outflow going. I think I have six dragons now. One of them is an egg. Five dragons running around. One of them is an egg. So,
oh wow!
Yeah. I should be able to report on that by next week's show. See how that's going. So,
I finally got a male 2 days ago. Finally,
where did
three
you get
females
it?
In my dungeon?
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, for that, I would say just go trade. You know.
Yeah. I don't know why. I just really wanted to source all my own farm. All right. I don't know why. It's just a thing I wanted to do.
Fair enough. Next up, rabbits killed in the Elflands will now only drop common brown rabbits rather than a chance at relicant ones.
I guess that would make sense. It's not relica, right?
Yeah. Players picking from their own grapevines will once again be given a variety of god grapes rather than just grapes of Zamorak. And, you know, everyone wants the Ceridoman ones.
Mm-hmm.
Gloomshroom zygomites can now be successfully sold to Zoe, the contract buyer. Yeah, zygomites are, I would say, probably the second best thing to be doing if you don't want to be around the farm constantly, you know, farming sheep or whatnot. So this is a change that was needed, a little bug. Various types of animal waste, droppings, manure, and whatnot can now be seen on your mini-map as red dots. Do you even manure, they said in this post.
I didn't get it.
I don't get that either. So. Yeah. Beehives will now only take the amount of flowers desired. So previously, I guess you could overfeed them with flowers. Yeah, okay. The Ardoin task achievement, Green Fingers, can now be consistently completed. And hopping worlds on the farm will no longer make your animals appear to be invisible for various lengths of time.
Okay.
So. Huh. That's pretty much all we got for the player-owned farm changes this week. I think we'll talk about in what have we been doing later, how our engagement with the farm is going and what it's doing for us. So we'll leave that for then.
Yep.
A couple of changes to the Elite Dungeon, including Elite Dungeons, including spacing fixed on the Elite title. Temple of Amnesia NPCs are no longer generated as potential Slayer contract targets from Sojobo when the player has chosen only to get contracts from targets on the Uncharted Isles. Hmm. All right. Now onto some other fixes. Player-owned port special voyages now display the correct scroll graphic icon for the scrolls the player has focused on. You know, I never noticed this, and I'm betting you didn't notice this either. I thought it was just a general scroll icon. I didn't know it would change.
Yeah, I didn't either.
So, no. That was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
Players will no longer be attempt to trade zero steel and creation points for zero bonus XP in a given skill.
Okay.
A new category for skill training activities has been added to the world map with an icon for all non-elite skills, and the agility, combat, and hunter training icons have been moved into this category and relabeled for consistency. So as you can see here, this is, I guess, wanting people to start using the maps again, or the in-game map again. I had a look at this. Did you have a look at this at all? I mean,
I haven't looked at a map. I'll tell you, the only time that I really use the in-game map is if it's in a quest and I need to find.
All right.
And I can't even say that anymore. I mean, now it's so burned in your head. You just know. You know what I mean? Like, you just know where everything is now.
But yeah.
So I used it a lot when I started.
So looking at the world map, you know, you look at the skilling icons, and you know they have all the tutors in there, which is good. But if you go to skill training, there's, you know, training spots for agility, hunter, and whatnot. But all the farming patches are missing the farming icon.
Oh, well, that's kind of a...
Yeah, they're not ticking on at all. That one was a little bit odd. And, you know, I have a feeling that there should also be a usability change made for this, because if you show divination training, it doesn't show the divine wisp colonies at all.
Oh yeah, that's not good.
You have to enable the divine wisps as a secondary category.
Yeah, no. That should be automatic.
And I mean, I guess that's because the divine wisp is like a resource, like a tree is a resource. But I mean, if you're wanting to do divination training, where are you going to do divination training, Tanis?
You're going to do it at the Wisp colonies. Even if you're doing a cache, you need to get to those rifts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that was that was a little bit confusing to me as to why that was happening with that. And I thought, oh, maybe that's a bug. So I reported. We'll have to wait and see what happens on that, if it does indeed come back as a bug. Because, you know, when you click divination training, you know, I think 90% of the people are going to be looking for the Wisp colony, right? So.
Yeah, they're probably not looking for the Hall of Memories.
No. So. Anyways, this is something we're going to watch going forward and change if need be. The Ring of Death will now correctly activate when at 15% charge, which is something you want to activate.
Yeah.
Reliably?
If you're wearing one.
You likely want it to activate.
You want it to work.
Yes. Now, here's a big one. Here's a big one that a lot of people were hoping for. Players with the six-month summer special package can now open the player-owned farm bonus chest at the Grand Exchange after completing the farm tutorial.
That's good. I mean, yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. And, you know, there was lots of questions about this because these were initially supposed to be Premier Club bonuses only, but they decided that, you know, after the community spoke on this, that, hey, you know, you're basically selling half a Premier Club in the summer. Let us have access to this. And, you know, I agree. It's a cosmetic, and that club or that summer price was actually pretty high for the amount of time left on it and what you got from it, and not to have all the same benefits as Premier. So I think this was a good change for them to make. So I'm pleased with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those exercises that just builds goodwill within the community.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't, you know, doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah, it's not a change that needs to go through, you know, QA and whatnot. It's just a promo thing. So that was good. The storage options for the Tool Leprechaun have been slightly tweaked, making item retrieval default from storage to unnoted with a right-click option to retrieve noted items where applicable.
Is there any reason to use a Tool Leprechaun anymore? I mean, everything's on our belt,
well,
right?
Well, no, they store compost.
Oh.
Yeah.
I always just carried that with me.
No. Store it in the Leprechaun. You can store up to 255 buckets, 255 of each type of compost.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Used to be only 30, but they changed it to be 255.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that makes farming runs easier. So we'll talk.
Right,
yeah,
cool.
You were wondering about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to get into this farming thing, and I didn't even know Leprechaun was useful.
And, you know, maybe I'll just – you mentioned you wanted to do that. Maybe I'll do that in the What Have I Been Doing section, because I actually started that up again for a said skill of the month. We'll see if I stand a chance. So,
okay.
Moving on to the ninja fixes. Going forward, Orlando Smith's hat is now tracked by the clue scroll log with an accompanying quick chat message. And, of course, that's a legendary item that they added for clue scrolls. So.
Well, that's taken a while to get that added.
Yeah. But I mean, if you get Orlando Smith's hat, you might want to be kind of incognito about it just because, you know, it's so big, or maybe you'd like to flaunt it everywhere, right? So.
This is RuneScape. You're going to flaunt it.
All right. Next up, the Earth Altar has been graphically updated. This was a tap project from one of the J-Mons. The original graphics that we had in the Earth Altar went back to, of course, when RuneScape 2 first came out. So they've been expanded to be, you know, high texture count, high material count now, and they just look just looks a lot better than it did previously. So Earth Altar has been graphically updated. There is also one that has said that the gemstone mine — I didn't go down to do it, but because I assume that was already done — but the gemstone mine below Shiloh Village has also been graphically updated as well. So. That's a nice little graphical updates in that, I guess, especially if you farm gemstone dragons. So I think that part of the dungeon was already updated, right? Graphically.
Yeah, I think so, because it hasn't been very long since they've been out for, like, what, a little over a year?
Yeah, a little over a year. So yeah. That's good. All right, so continuing on with the patch notes, converted the Constitution XP rewards from the Missing My Mummy quest into an XP lamp. They have also polished the audio settings interface so that when you did a global mute, it wouldn't gray out the entirety of the box, which, I mean, okay. I don't know exactly what was polished with it, but I'll take their word for it. So.
Sure.
Yep. Change the XP rewards from the Morning's End Part 1 into XP lamps. That's good, I guess. And they have added a few more names to the bottom of the preset list for you. And, you know, they actually did a bit of an oopsie with this when they were releasing this, and when they first put it out, they put the ambassador in there. You remember the ambassador was that boss that was talked about?
Oh, yeah.
It turns out that the ambassador will be coming in Elite Dungeon 3.
Oh, see, I always thought I always thought we had it mixed up between, like, I thought that was the Magister, and they just decided to go with that name instead of the Ambassador. Huh. Okay, so I guess it's still yet to come.
Yeah. But it looks like the new achievements, or sorry, the new presets that have been added include treasure trails, clue scrolls, uncharted isles, and Alfaven Creeth, whatever that means, whatever that is. So, yeah, and I mean, we learned that there's going to be the Ambassador coming into game with that. And finally, added a new option to the Wicked Hood that allows the player to quick teleport to the last location they use the hood to reach. And I can't underscore how big this is. Because anyone going for 99 runecrafting today or 120 runecrafting will likely want to use the Soul Altar for this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get Wicked Teleport tokens, you can charge your hood with that. And basically what this will allow you to do is just to quick teleport to the Soul Altar with the Wicked Hood and then use this new right-click option and get there a lot quicker. Because when you're charging the Soul Altar, you don't need to go through the Abyss every time. You only need to go through the Abyss when you actually get the runes for it. So, I think that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much it for patch notes this week. Anything else in here that I didn't mention that you think we should?
No, nothing. Nothing really struck me. I was hoping for one patch, and we didn't get it. So
which one?
I was hoping we would at least get like a beam or a sound or something for an egg. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Just how long did you spend down there?
One of my dragon eggs was over 8 hours. So,
that seems really long.
I know, and then they came out with the 1 in 2,000 drop rate. I'm like, man, I know I killed a lot more than that before I got. I mean, the first one probably came within that drop rate, but the second one, I think, was when it was really, really long.
Yeah. And, I mean, at that point, you might as well ask yourself the question, maybe you should just go with 2 dragons and breed them.
Well, I kept getting females. Like, that was the problem. Like,
oh, okay. And you didn't want to go trade. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right.
Yeah, same thing happened with the Zygonites, too. I kept getting females. I just now got a male.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, something that we have been waiting for a long time is finally here, and that's another showcase of the mining and smithing rework. So, quick question. What do you think about this going in?
I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't really take much else new that was here for this in this update or in this live stream. It was mainly just a recap of where they're at and the fact that things are being developed and whatnot.
See, I guess maybe I missed some of the documents beforehand because I didn't know about the metal bank. So that was a cool addition. I just thought that was the hopper. But I guess they're calling it something different now.
The mining and smithing bank that'll access your thing everywhere.
Yeah, and I knew they were going to, I knew they were replacing the rune items that were dropping, but I didn't hear what that was going to be, like, finalized, and now we know it's, like, salvage items.
I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, everything I heard that I didn't, you know, like, I also like what they're doing with the spring cleaner. I was a little worried about that because it's one of my favorite items. Like, I never leave home without it. But all of their plans, I thought sounded really, really good and really promising.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they went through a lot of the things that were contentious in this, and we'll have to wait and see what the general uptake of this is once they hit beta. And this is something I think we need to underscore, is that when it comes time to doing this beta, when it comes out in November, they need to make sure that people play it properly.
Yeah, 100%. And I also think that people need to take a step back be patient with this. They have worked really hard and for a really long time and tried to cross every T and dot every I.
Yeah.
But that being said, it will alter some players' style. Okay.
So yes, like, it will.
But for the long-term health of the game, it's the right thing to do. I 100% believe that. So, this is basically, I feel like this is rectifying something that should have never happened in the first place. And that's going to cause some discomfort for some people, but we're really just getting back to where we should have been a long time ago. Like, I don't think there ever should have been materials dropped the way that they are. So we're just now, you know, basically being able to rectify that.
Yeah. 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 So, and you know, the stream started off, and what they did is they went through some of the mining spots, and they basically said that light Anamica will be found in the middle of the desert because that's where Tupmakin blew up apparently, and near Prif in the Elven lands because that's where Saren shattered herself. So that's what they're going with that. Dark Anamica will come from the empty throne room. From, of course, Zaros related. So that those are two things that they showed off in the live stream. And of course we know the empty throne room was that big place they added with what was that update around the dig site? What quest was that for?
It had abilities.
Children of Ma. Yeah.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. So they added that there. Now, I think we should get the elephant out of the way right now and just talk about the ore and drop bar replacements. And there is actually a full document for this that they posted here. So let's see. Drop tables and spring cleaner. That's going to be the one everyone wants to hear about. So let's just have a look at that right now, because I need to copy that to my drive. I can make it bigger. Yes. Thank you, Google Drive, for being smart about that. All right. So basically what they said here is that there are two types of dropped items that need to be replaced, and these are the smithable equipment like rune plate bodies and the smithable materials like ores and bars. So the dropped smithable equipment will be removed from drop tables entirely, and they say this is to make sure that mining is the best source of smithable materials, but also because the level adjustments and the rework mean that old gear is less valuable than it was, so the drops need to be changed to protect values of the drop table. They're going to be introducing salvage, just as we have in the elite dungeons, and it's going to have alc and disassembly properties that are going to be similar to the items that you would get previous to the rework. So if you get, say, a rune salvage piece, it'll alc or disassemble to something like the rune plate bodies do currently. So it also won't be able to be turned into bars with the spring cleaner, and it cannot be equipped. And I think that's what everyone liked about the spring cleaner at this point in time, right? Mm-hmm. Is that it was just basically like you get all these bars and whatnot. So they're fixing that with salvage. Salvage isn't going to be tradable and it won't stack. There's going to be 120 kinds of salvage divided into 5 sizes, 6 tiers, and 4 types. Okay. All right. That's interesting.
Well, that's probably because of you got to think, it's going to be from bronze to rune, right?
Yeah. The sizes are tiny, small, medium, large, and huge. Larger salvage alcs for more and contains more components. And these increases work as multipliers, with a huge salvage having 5 times more gold than a tiny salvage when it's alked. So tiny is going to be 1 times, small 2, medium 3, large 4, huge 5. And the same thing goes for invention components. So there's the sizes. The 6 tiers are named after the first 6 metals, and they're named this way to give them recognizable names that are associated with a particular value tier. But there is no mechanical link to the rune, so to speak. So, and then the tier will determine the alc value for the item and the amount of components it can yield from disassembly. Later logical tiers like Necronium can be added if we find a need for them in balancing and filling out drop tables. So basically, here's the way it's going to look right now. So a bronze tiered item will high elk for 20 GP, give two components, and have a 98.9% junk chance, whereas a rune salvage piece will high elk for 8,000 GP, give two components, and have a 45% junk chance. So that's what we're looking at for tier. So we've looked at sizes and tiers so far. Now let's look at the types, and there's going to be four different types included, including bladed, spiky, blunt, and plated, and these basically cover all the very the four different kinds of armor that you could really find in game. So you'd find bladed rune salvage, for example, and this would give base blade or metallic components and rarely give sharp, subtle, or dexterous components. And these basically are replacements for, say, you know, the rune two-handed swords that you would get. And plated is for the armor and whatnot, and blunted is for like staves and heads and whatnot as well. And spiky, I'm guessing, is for like maces and such. So I think this is a good way of going about this. We're going to have to wait and see on values in the beta how this goes. And I think that's one thing we all need to be cognizant of, is that this is a living process. And when it comes to it at the end of the day, they're going to run this beta in November. And everyone who does Slayer needs to go on that beta and do a handful of Slayer tasks. Because, you know, if you don't do that, you're not going to know if the value is acceptable or not. And if it's not acceptable, Jagex needs to know that in a constructive way. So this is the part I think we need to be the most worried about. Because, you know, these RuneScape player betas are notorious for for putting a piece of content out. People either don't play it or they don't illustrate what their concerns are clear enough, and then they start complaining months later, and then lo and behold, you have Legacy Combat and old school RuneScape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think it's safe to say that RSBNB update will be the hand-holding guide for the beta.
Oh, for sure. I know I will I will be there. Yeah, and it probably, you know, like I was telling you before the show, I think it's going to hit the people that do Slayer and trash mob type stuff a lot harder than it will hit people that do bosses. That being said, it's still the right thing to do, so we need to make sure that the ALK values are correct, because this really is the way, the direction we need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Drop tables. Existing drop tables will be altered by swapping equipment out for salvage, and they're going to try and keep everything the same tier as before. The size will be equal to the number of bars needed to make that item. So if you got a rune dagger, that would be tiny. If you got a rune plate body, that would be huge. I think that's a very simple way of looking at it, you know? Five bars is huge, and it basically just keeps the old system in place, but gives ALK values and whatnot. So, and I think a long time ago, Mr. Bistro actually wrote an Informer article about this, that there should be bosses in game that do exactly this. So, trash drops.
So you're right. Yeah.
Then here's some final examples here. A rune longsword will give you one small bladed rune salvage. Bronze plate body will give you one huge plated bronze salvage. One mithril mace is one tiny blunt mithril salvage. An Addy square shield is one small plated adamant salvage. And the iron two-handed sword is one medium bladed iron salvage. So that's how that works. Now let's get to ores and bars, because I think that's what everyone is also going to be concerned about. Because, you know, the whole reason to go kill avian seas is
adamant bars.
Adamant bars. Mm-hmm. So these will be removed from the drop tables and replaced with a new item, bottled stone spirits. And they say stone spirits are wisp-like creatures thought to originate in the spirit realm. Each stone spirit has an affinity to a special kind of rock, and not all of them are naturally occurring. Stone spirits, which are attuned to useful mining ores, are particularly valued, and many creatures capture them and bottle them for future use. And when a stone spirit is unbottled, if there's a nearby rock of the type it is attuned to, it immediately bonds to the rock and increases the concentration of ore in that rock. And the amount is only small, but enough to roughly double the yield. And each stone spirit only produces a single piece of ore, so large numbers of them need to be carried by miners if you want continual double yields.
We'll see about this one. I feel like if there is a weak link, it's this right here. But just because I don't know if there's enough people that will be mining to make it, you know, balanced between the drops, you know.
And, you know, I see it the other way. I see this as kind of a – I see this as actually one of the best parts of the update, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, people love the – love getting those bars and whatnot, or the ore from avian seas and whatnot, and I'm just using those as the example. And if you're going to be able to get these stone spirits and sell them, and people are going to, you know, be mining that ore because they need it for something, what this is effectively doing is this is effectively making it like a mining potion in all but name.
Yeah, that's true. But it really depends on what the demand for these stone spirits is really going to be.
Well, double the ore. And I imagine you get a rune spirit. Imagine you get a rune spirit because, you know, we don't really put much emphasis on rune ore today because you can get it from so many places, right? Mm-hmm. Or rune bars, for that example. But the thing is that rune bars in this update are going to be needed to make Elder Rune.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can mine rune ore faster, even if you're high level mining, the rune spirits are going to be worth a lot.
Well, that would be good if they are. I can kind of see it going either way. So I hope they,
you know,
do
that's
good.
That's why I like this part of the update. So
that's fair.
Yeah. Now. Let's see. Each of the effects will have its own type. All stone spirits are tradable. And so this is basically just going down the whole list of ores here. So there's really not too much. Each time the player acquires a piece of ore, if the player has at least one of the corresponding types of stone spirit, one spirit is consumed and additional ore is required. This allows ores to be mined twice as quickly. Okay, we already knew that. No XP is rewarded for the additional ore. It's more like the Fury's and the Varrock armor.
So I wonder what the – like if this will be for all of the ores or does it only go up to a certain
– No, this is for all the ores. This is from copper to dark animica.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that goes all the way up then. Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So metallic dragons will have their guaranteed bar drops replaced by an equal number of stone spirits of the same type of metal of the dragon, or the closest ore equivalent, i.e. coal spirits for steel dragons. So there you have it right there, is that Adian rune dragons are going to drop those high-level spirits that you're going to use for mining those ores. So that could make those, I think, very lucrative because, I mean, I don't know how many people fight Adian rune dragons and how many people do those for Slayer tasks, but I can imagine the rune ones being particularly coveted.
I usually skip them, but that's just because they take too long.
All right. Spring Cleaner. This is something that I think we need to talk about here. With the removal of smithable equipment, the Spring Cleaner will lose a lot of its purpose and value. Dismantle mode is being tweaked, and two new modes are being added, disassembly and alc mode, and these will only work on salvageable items. And if technically feasible, we will allow these modes to be configured on a per-tier basis and a per-item basis, so you can alc rune plate bodies but disassemble adamant daggers.
See, that's cool.
Yeah, I really like the sound of the new Spring Cleaner. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, it just saves you time. You have to go to the GE. You can see your money as you're going. I like it.
Yeah. In dismantle mode, where a smithable item remains on the drop table, for example, they still might want to drop arrows or bolts, dismantle mode will not work on them and provide bars.
Okay.
Salvage items cannot be dismantled, and non-smithing items will continue to be dismantleable for now. This may change in the future as we look at the economy of other skills. Alc mode is on the Spring Cleaner 3000 and higher, and in Alc mode, any salvage that the Spring Cleaner activates is automatically alked and converted into coins equal to what it would have been high alked for. No runes are consumed. I think that's a big one. No runes are consumed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. Disassembly mode will be available on the Spring Cleaner 5000 and higher, and in this mode, any salvage that the Spring Cleaner activates on is automatically dismantled, and this does not cost any charges for the Spring Cleaner to do so. This only works beautiful. On salvageable items.
God, that's beautiful. That's going to help me so much to be able to clean up the clutter so that I can, you know, maybe see the drops better. Like, this, so good. Yeah. Really like this change, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the only I think this is a good design in theory. I think the only thing that needs to happen with this is that the players need to play the beta when it comes out. So
yeah, we just have to make sure that the alc values are balanced accordingly. I think it's the main, you know, the main thing. Everything else to me sounds like such a huge improvement. And I remember the first beta, like I really, really enjoyed the way it worked. So I'm looking forward to this. I think it's obvious now, though, that we're definitely not getting it this year. If the beta comes
in
out.
November. Yeah, I don't think they'd ship it in December.
So. Yeah, I don't either. So
now moving on with this, all new tiers of armor are tank armor. And then there was something else from this live stream that we had a long discussion about, but I think it's best to just have a listen to this and hear what the resolution was on this from the live stream itself. So here we are.
I was asking, well, all the new tiers of armor are tank armor. So they won't have much impact on a lot of parts of the economy unless you really want some level 80 tank armor. There is one tier of power armor at 90 and then one tier of power armor at 92, which are extremely long and expensive to make. So you won't just be falling over power armor.
There we have it. There we have it.
So does that mean that it's going to be real tier 90? Or
those ones will be.
Thank goodness. Finally, we won one. Finally.
Yeah, I mean, you remember how much we had to talk about this on that podcast?
Oh, I was irritated, man. Like, they couldn't give us one. Just one time, you know? Like, yeah, that's huge. And you know what? I want to spend the time to make that armor. Like,
oh yeah, me too.
I'm definitely like finding myself enjoying the game more, making more of my own stuff. But then like on like a double XP weekend, that's when I like to put up the numbers. You know, like there are certain times when you want to put up the numbers, but at other times, you just want to enjoy the process. And that's what I'm looking forward with this masterwork. I think it's going to be really cool. Like a really, and I like tank armor. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, tank armor is good for Slayer.
It's good to keep me alive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm never going to be putting out the DPS of everyone else, but I need to stay alive.
Yeah.
It helps with that.
Yeah. Definitely. So, I think, you know, at this point in the live stream, I figured, okay, the number one thing that everyone I talk to about from the skilling side of it is going to be happy. Now we just need to ensure the values are fine, and then this update will go off as planned. So I'm good.
Yeah. So far. You know, be wary, though. There will be a vocal minority that will.
Oh, yeah. There was in the Twitch chat.
You know, but I'm not convinced that that is legitimate. All right. Hear me out, though, okay? Because this happens every live stream. Now, the people that are watching RuneScape live streams are probably coming over from OS. OS is three times the size when it comes to their Twitch viewers than RS3. And I really think those are the people that are really essentially trolling because they don't play the game anyway. They're like, oh, it's going to run the game. Da-da-da-da-da. No, the vocal minority that I worry about is it's that elite class, you know, that I don't even think is going to be that hurt. But thank goodness they're not making comp people make masterwork, because if that was the case, that'd be rough. People would be pissed, dude. So I mean.
Yeah,
you know, we should be okay, but there will be voices going, "Ah, that's the worst thing ever."
Yeah,
you run the game.
And then some XP rates here, and you know, these are, you know, just pre QA testing. They're not guaranteed to be the same. Anamika ore will be 80,000 to 180,000 XP per hour based on activity. Saren stones will come in at the middle at 130,000 XP an hour, and this won't be as good as Elder Rune, but Elder Rune will be better than passive Saren stones. So, and you know, I'm not putting any emphasis on the XP per hour right now, because that's all going to get changed in QA. That's all going to be tested, you know. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah, neither am I. I mean,
not too worried right now. Like, I'll just say.
And at best, right now, at best, you look at 130K an hour mining. So, and that's at level, what, 92, I think, for Saren Stone?
Yeah, but you can still boost that with stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you can boost that, but at the end of the day, mining has never been a fast XP gaining skill, and I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for that from this update.
Yeah.
This update is just making it work better. So if we don't get 200K an hour rates, I'm okay with that.
All right. Now, Traherne hour. This is another thing. I don't know how big of a deal this is. I personally have never taken part in it. But basically, when the hour starts, each world will have a 1 in 30 chance of becoming either a light Animica or a dark Animica rock that becomes harmonized. Otherwise, the highest will be harmonized rune at tier 50.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that do that. And I know a lot of people that do that for money. Because you can make like 1 to 3 mil a day just hitting a couple Tron hours. I don't really know if that's the best solution, but honestly, I don't think there was much of a solution for that. There were some things that were going to – I mean, there were just some things that were going to get hit, and I think that's one of them.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but I mean, it's Prif, so – if there is not enough skilling there for you, then you suck, okay? Like, there's plenty to do without the Tron Hour. Like, it's Prif, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you go fishing, right? You know?
Oh. I still haven't gotten the Max Guild, by the way.
Shane, what are you afraid of?
Just wait. We'll hear more about that later. Okay. Next up, we did have some previews of some of the armor that they're working on with this. I think it does look pretty damn good as well. So that was fun to see. So let's just get a preview of that right now for those of you guys on video here. But basically, they're genderless. It's the same armor for whether you're male or female. So right now, if you're watching video, you're looking at the I believe this is the tier 70 armor. Mm. And it's green. I forget what the name of it is. I don't have that up at the moment. But, you know, if you go forward to the Elder Rune and the Baneite armor as well, the Baneite is going to be blue. And the idea behind this one is that it does look kind of mechanical as well with that. You know, just given how Bane is attuned and whatnot.
Dude, the Bane is cool. Like,
yeah, it is. And you know, these are models. These are 3D models. They haven't been brought into game yet, so they might look a little bit different with that, but still, it's something.
They're adding cool stuff with, like, with the Bane weapons and shields. Like,
yeah. Just look at these armors and realize that if you want something that looks, you know, really neat in game, previously you would have to go to, you know, the Solomon's General Store for it. But lo and behold, yeah, you can make it now with smithing.
It's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah. And then the Elder Rune armor. Elder Rune. You know, I am pleased with the way Elder Rune looked. It looks a lot like what I imagine a modern Rune armor would look like. It's still got that typical Rune color to it, but it's got a little bit of an adornment to it as well. You know, just that classic Runite blue that you would get in RuneScape, going back to all the way to RuneScape Classic. So, yeah. I really like the way these look.
I do too. So, yeah, I think they did a good job with them.
And, I mean, you might very well want to wear that and show it around if you end up making that armor. At least use it as a cosmetic override. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, because it's going to take a long time. You're going to have to put a lot of work into it. So.
Yeah. And, you know, with that, I think I'm glad that I got 99 smithing.
Yeah. Although I'll tell you what, I don't think I would mind it so much to do it again. Like if I, you know, I might have to bring the alt out and get him warmed up again, just because it seems like it'd be a little bit funner than it was.
When we did it, definitely.
Yeah.
Tier 70 and above smithing armors will be degradable. That's nothing new. It's been like that since Barrow, so yeah, there's nothing really to cry about there. Existing rune drops will be replaced with salvage. We already talked about drop tables and whatnot. On launch, existing smithing gear will be swapped for tokens that can either be used for getting the salvage items or the appropriate wearable armor.
My advice is make sure you don't have any of that. Tokens are fine, but make sure you have – I wouldn't take the chances myself, you know. If I had a big stack of rune plate bodies, that should be on the G like right now.
You know what my answer to this is?
What's that?
Whenever you do Slayer, just Alk stuff, disassemble right after the task.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I do.
Yeah.
So.
Drop them in your alchemizer where your thing is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They say the value of rune bars is expected to go up and then go back down after the update hits, and the reason for this is because everyone wanting to make Elder Rune will need rune bars.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure if I'm willing to, you know, put 100% faith in that, but it's a thing that kind of makes sense.
You know, I don't count on anything with the economy anymore.
And, you know, I do want to make my own, you know, tier 90 power armor and whatnot, right? So maybe I should just start stockpiling rune bars.
I'm thinking about not selling them when I do get them for drops. And I mean, I get ore from the spring cleaner, but I'm not going to smelt that to bars until the rework, because right now it costs so much coal, you know. I'm not a big fan of smelting rune into bars.
Yeah. So. You know, another thing that was mentioned in this live stream is that they're going to need to have a look at the way this is set up, so that when it comes down to it, there's going to be dragon power armor at the end of the day in game. So if you have dragon armor at tier 60, it's going to become power armor.
But that's good, because that's what it used to be, right? I mean, before EOC, the dragon armor all had a strength bonus? So it had something like that before EOC. Dragon was a
– Huh.
I think it had a strength bonus on it, man. I could have swore.
I can't remember that.
I think it did. It had something like that, but I don't know.
Well,
if I'm right, then it's just taking
it
back.
Let us know.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, there's these design documents here. Any other ones you want to go over? I mean, we did spend a lot of time on this already.
Yeah,
Masterwork armor? Do you have any Masterwork armor? Let's see.
The armor spikes.
Okay. The Masterwork doc is the same. Okay, let's talk about armor spikes. These were something that were theorized that they could be doing. This is basically what they're calling the smithing overload, the high-level tradable item. And basically, this will be an inventory item that you can put in your backpack or your ammo slot. And if you're fighting something within melee distance, it will basically do extra damage to them, even if you're not using melee.
Which is very cool.
Thorns.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, it's like I know for sure that was something that you and Bistro and Parnassius all wanted to see come out of this update, and it was the one thing that we didn't get with the last beta. So, this is real cool. I think it's neat.
90 smithing, 1,000 progress to make as standard for Elder Rune bars. Smithing XP will be awarded at the same rate as making any other Elder item. Completing the recipe adds 1,000 stacking armor spike items to the player's inventory. An additional recipe will allow the player to make 10 bars into 10,000 spikes for 10,000 progress. So basically, it's going to be a progress mechanic, and you're basically going to be able to split them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's going to be cool. And if there's one thing that will get the that will bring the two groups together, it will be that they people will have to do smithing because they will want that damage bonus. Although, I don't know, though. When you think about it, now you're going to have to choose. Do you want to carry the God Book with special effects or whatever, or will you take the extra damage with the spikes?
No. It's not in your pocket slot. It's in your ammo slot.
Oh, it's in your ammo slot?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they said pocket
no,
slot.
No.
Oh, damn.
Or they just work if they're in your backpack as well.
Really? Oh, that's that's good.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. All right.
Damage will scale up through your smithing level. If your player's wielding melee shield, the damage will be dealt from armor spikes will be doubled. And if using a defender, the damage will be increased by 50%.
Wow. Shields might make a small comeback.
You know, I don't know if they will, because if you're just doing Slayer, you're still going to go for that, the amount of damage you can put out, either dual wielding or two-handed.
I mean, I suppose so, but I don't know. There's a pretty cool effect on the Bane shield, so I could definitely see just parking down at Abbey's and you're never going to get hurt. Let it ride.
Yeah, you know? But the problem with Abyssal Demons is Scythe.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right about that.
I'm trying to think of where this would be. Like, I mean, it would work even at the Abyssal Demons if you didn't use a shield, because those things all, if assuming you have the Aggression Potion, are still in distance one to you, so you'll still be using your spikes on them.
Yeah, so even if you are using the Scythe, they'll still be...
Yeah, it'll still work. You just won't get the damage boost. So.
Okay.
But overall, I mean, this is really good progress being made, and I think we just need to look at the beta now for what's going to be happening on this. So I'm pleased.
I don't
think I have much else to say on this today. Do you?
No. Just... Keep calm, keep a steady mindset, and wait for the beta.
Yeah. Artisan's Workshop is being redesigned as the Smithing Guild, essentially central hub for smithing. Though we already knew that.
Yeah, and there's some kind of I think the portable forges are going to be turned into an item for the that you can use in the artisans to give everybody like a 10% boost. So that sounded kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's move on right now to the crystal capsules. And, you know, we don't normally highlight Treasure Hunter here, but I feel that anytime there's something new with Treasure Hunter, we should highlight it. Because I opened this up, and I won 10 Treasure Hunter keys off a Treasure Hunter.
I did the same thing. I was like, What? Shut the front door. Like, we went in Treasure Hunter Keys now, which I actually thought was cool, but I don't know how this game works because, you know, I spaced barred all the way through the instructions.
Yeah. So basically, it's one of the more complicated ones. You open Treasure Hunter up and you get a panel of the rarities of the crystals that are currently available for claim. There's 8 of them that are to be unlocked with the Treasure Hunter keys, and these contain all the prizes. So keep an eye out for the rare Shadow Gem, which will reward fabulous prizes, including the Shadow Gem necklace, cape, crown, sack, and various protein items, as well as 10 free keys. So obviously that's what I won by opening the shadow chest was 10 free keys. And I'm guessing that is the most common one. So, you know, they say if you're not happy about the rarity of prizes you have in front of you, well, good news. You can reset your pool, providing you meet the following requirements. You have unlocked at least 4 gems in the current pool. You have 100 hearts of ice, which will be consumed. And there is no shadow gem in the pool. And it must be unlocked before the pool can be reset. So, yeah, basically this is a way of seeing and ensuring that you're able to win various items off Treasure Hunter and have a chance to maybe win some extra keys along the way. So,
if you can figure it out.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. I wasn't exactly sure what to do with it. So, you know, still a little confusing, but... You know, I think the general idea behind it is that you can change the gems if you don't like the prizes that you're going to be able to get from it, or at least the tier of the prizes you're going to get from it. So
yeah, I just started clicking and I got the keys. I was like, looky here.
All right, so let's move on to something else. And you know, we didn't really have much on this. This week, and this was something I was just, you know, discovering during my final run through of RuneScape channels and whatnot, and lo and behold, I discovered something, an unlisted video that was put into a playlist on the YouTube channel called Harmony, and this is, of course, the Lumbridge theme song, and this was one of the things that was recorded at Abbey Road this year, so let's have a listen right now. So that's part one. That's the Lumbridge theme song. And, you know, we were wondering when we were going to hear about this. And if you go to the end of the video, it'll say pre-order now on vinyl and CD. The RuneScape Orchestral Collection. So it appears as though we're going to be getting a product called the RuneScape Orchestral Collection available on vinyl and CD at some point.
All right. Yeah.
So that should be fun. It would be interesting to see what else is included in the collection. But we know there is one other thing that is going to be included in that collection. And I think this one is, you know, anyone who knows RuneScape will know what this is. And it's that very iconic piece of music. So let's just listen to this. All right. I'm just going to leave that as is, and I'm going to make sure it's uninterrupted in post. So those of you guys listening to this after the fact will know that you just heard the RuneScape theme song in its orchestral format there. So that was definitely something, wasn't it?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. It's exactly like what we talked about was needed, you know, where, you know, you watch any kind of Star Trek, there's the signature riff when the Enterprise appears, right? And that is the same thing for RuneScape as well. So,
yeah, it really is. And it is iconic. Like that is, I mean, and it almost sounds, I don't know, you can feel the in-game world, you know, like it's, it's cool.
Yeah.
Very immersive.
Yeah. So, and you know, I must also remind everyone that before RuneFest, we're going to be going to the RuneScape orchestral performance at the night before.
Lucky duck.
So I bet we'll be hearing those two as well. So, all right. So that's it for RuneScape updates this week. We're going to move on to questions, but first we just want to give thanks to a number of people who support us on Patreon. And this week that's Cody T, Nora, Kyle, and Brock H. Thank you guys for your wonderful support of RSBNB update. So more on that can be found at patreon.com/RSBNB. All right. So moving on to questions right now. So first one up, we got an audio question here from Parnassius.
G'day from the land down under, Shane and Tannis. Pern here once again with a quick question for you. With the release of player-owned farms, we have seen the douchebaggery of some players come out once again, crashing players hunting eggs by dropping cannons when someone's already there and the like, and just generally being tools. My thought is that a perk we could unlock on our player-owned dungeons is the ability to place the souls of the creatures we have in rooms back into Ushbaatis, so we could change creatures. This should only be a once-a-week thing so as not to be abused, but it'd be great if I could hunt black dragons this week, then on Wednesday's reset, I could put their souls into new Ushbaatis and place some blue or red dragons. Then next week I could switch back to the blacks again, or Abbey Demons, or whatever. Do you think this is a viable option, or would it be too overpowered in your opinion? I think if we had to unlock the ability with, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 Slayer points and still have to purchase new Ushbaatis each time, it wouldn't be, but would love to hear your thoughts and discussions on this. As always, thanks for the entertaining podcast and happy scaping to you all.
Ah, of course, one of the shockwaves of the player-owned farm.
Yeah.
So as it works now, you can basically just capture the soul, put it in your dungeon, and that's the end of it. So basically what this is calling for is the ability to use another Ushtabi and grab that soul from the creature that's in your dungeon and just store it in your bag. So you could have a rotating collection of monsters.
Mm-hmm. It would be wonderful. I've been a victim of the douchebaggery. It's been rough, and that definitely would help. And I don't see any adverse effects. I don't see it being overpowered or anything. You still got to go out and you're still using the Ushabis. You still have to gather the souls. Just being able to trade them in and out.
And you've done the work of hunting them, and that's the big one, right?
So. Yeah, you've done the work. So it's just not letting stuff go in waste. It's just not having to do the work over, and over. Yeah. I would love to see that happen.
And you know, I think that this is potentially something that could be done, but I think it also touches on what people have always wanted, you know, to be able to effectively become your own Slayer Master, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would be, you know, it would do a lot for the places that do get crowded, and it would do a lot for just the crashing in general. Yeah. Little diversion here. Also, be very careful with your trade windows at the player owned farm, because there's douchebaggery going on there too, with people trying to slip in undervalued offers and hope that you don't catch it quick enough. So just like it used to happen at the Duel Arena and stuff like that. So be on your toes.
Yeah. And you know, did you gather blue dragon souls or whatever you were fighting when you were on that run yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I gathered blues and greens and blacks, reds. I gathered them all.
Okay. And how many of them did you put in your dungeon?
I put one of each color except for black. I put two blacks.
Okay.
But I have extra Yushabis like in my bank right now, because I would gather like, I think I'd get like two or three souls when I was doing it. So, because you can catch the souls pretty quickly.
Yeah, because dragons are relatively low leveled. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, the one thing I'm still wondering about, and this really hasn't been revealed, is that is the rarity of the dragon eggs different, you know, per green, blue, red, black?
Yeah, see, I don't know, because mine – I don't know, because two of mine came from green.
Where were you fighting green dragons, just out of curiosity?
To get their souls, I did the brutal greens down in Ancient Cavern, and then put them in – both the eggs came from my dungeon. So I have two greens.
Oh, so if you get a brutal green soul, that just gives you a green dragon then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I got a black and a red. Or no, black and blue. Black and blue. I don't have a red yet.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think that that would be a good thing to add in. And, you know, I think people have been wanting, you know, part of 120 Slayer and beyond 99 Slayers wanting more to it. And I think if you could just add a little bit more functionality with that, and even if you got to 120 Slayer to do that, that'd be fine, right? Because what level Slayer are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm 120.
Okay, there you go, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, if you're going to be your own Slayer Master, why not allow that to happen? So
yeah,
I think that'd be a good quality of life fix for that dungeon as well. Because, you know, one day you might want to farm abyssal demons. One might be dragons, right?
Yes.
And it just gives you something to do, and you could have effectively a soul bank down there. That sounds weird. But if it just basically lets you, you know, have these things with you when you're on your task, the Ushtabis, and then collect the souls and then just store them there for when you need one, right?
Yeah, it would be – I think it would be great. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'd be fun to see. And do it as a part of 120 Slayer, you know, becoming your own Slayer Master.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good idea. I like it. And, you know, I'm going to count myself very lucky, considering that I did about 6 hours on release of Blue Dragons, got one egg, bought the other one, and didn't get crashed once in the resource dungeon.
Wow. Yeah.
So, fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, but, I got hit at the Black Dragons. The Black Dragons at the Evil Chicken Lair. I'm like, really? Like, this is where you picked to crash me? Like, for real? But no. Nope.
You know, I have currently birthed two Blue Dragons and one Red Dragon already from my two initial ones that I have found.
Okay.
So, I mean, they come. It's just a matter of, you know, having them grow and maybe.
You've been doing any crossbreeding there, Shane? Or?
Well, we're gonna get to that because this red dragon. I'm waiting for it to hatch and grow up, and then I want to throw it in the breeding pen and see what we get when we combine a red and a blue.
Ah, okay.
It'd be interesting to see if we could pull a green out of that, and then. What else? And then maybe get the Royal Dragon. I don't know. Though I think the Royal Dragon is based off of the shiny trait and increasing the shininess because that's the special dragon breed. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, all right. You know, at some point I'm also going to ask, you know, with the farm and whatnot and with these animals, you know, you get the jackalope or you get the Royal Dragon. What's the purpose of that? I mean, you can't show them to other people. You can only flash them in a trade window.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't know what the purpose of them is. And, you know, if you get a rare mutation like that, you're not going to sell it for beans, are you?
No, you could. You just keep getting royal hide, right?
Yeah.
You get royal.
Oh. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. We'll wait and see. See what happens. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Parnassius. Next one is from Dragoil. Dragoil here. Quick question for both you and the audience. So, audience, listen up. What is the most experience you can get in one tick? This can include bonus XP, double XP, etc. What is the most you have personally gotten? Enjoy.
I don't know. Like,
does disassembling something with invention count and using bonus XP on that, the 50%?
I guess, right? That'd be a tick. I guess that's what I would probably be too.
Yeah. You know, there was some I was getting close to, and you know, this probably isn't much, but it's probably a lot for Herblor. And you know, I was getting 750 XP per tick per super prayer renewal potions on double XP weekend. But if you did that with overloads, factoring in the 3x, 3.06, so I mean like close to 4,000 XP per overload you could be getting. That's something else if you did do that, though. That's lots of banking. Another personal favorite for me, factoring in bonus XP, farming outfit, double XP weekend, and the like, is Elder Trees and Spirit Trees.
Oh, yeah. The Spirit Trees would be like...
because they're 23K base.
Yeah, so that's like, what, 46K then plus bonus... that'd be
plus avatar, plus farming outfit. Yeah. So I think at that point you're probably looking close to 75K per tree.
Yeah.
But that's only every 3 days, and that's on double XP weekend. So
yeah, but I mean, this is per tick, so I mean.
Yeah. Let's see. What else is there that's big?
I don't know how much a full inventory of summoning of like water tallies or something would be.
Let's have a look.
But I'm guessing that would be what I have done. Because the most XP I ever gained was this last double XP weekend. I was doing summoning. I was doing earth and fire talismans, but it's not much difference.
Let's see. Water talisman. 783. So Geyser Titan 783 base. So double that, triple that. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
2100, 2500 with other bonuses as well. And multiply that by how many per inventory? 28?
Probably like 26 because you have your shards and
so 62K?
Your pouches. Yeah, that's, yeah, 62K.
Yeah. So, let's see. What else is there? You know, I just come back to farming on that because farming gives you those big, big XP drops. I'm not sure what else there could be. Herblore comes down to doing those overload potions. Oh, I got one for you. Stand by. I got to get the XP on this. You know where I'm going with this?
I don't, actually.
Metaphos?
Huh?
Metaphos?
What is a Metaphos that would be... oh, Soul Altar.
Yep, 220 XP per charge, and you can have 100 charges. So 22K default, and double that, triple that. So on double XP weekend, you're getting 66K per completion on that, and factor in, say, a boost from your Citadel of 6%, giving you 69K, 70K, plus maybe Runecrafting Outfit, Pulse Core, easily upwards of 75K XP for this, even if you bring urns as well. So 78K XP based on that.
Who would think you could get a 75K XP drop off with some rune crafting?
But you see, you got to spend the time charging that too. I think that's 3 or 4 runs to charge the altar beforehand. So,
yeah.
Yeah, definitely the Soul Altar. So, all right. Well, there's some options right there. I'd like to see what else everyone comes up with.
Yeah.
I think mine are pretty elementary because I don't, you know, optimize gameplay that much for XP. But that's what came to mind. So, thank you, Dragoil. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also call or text 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. That number is really good if you want to leave us a voicemail, if you want to leave us an audio question and you're in the United States. That is by far the simplest way to leave us an audio question. Or if you have text questions as well, you can leave us a DM or at mention on Twitter @RSBNB. All right, you ready for tech news?
Yeah, let's.
We knew we were going to be covering this Apple story this week, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
Apple announced their new iPhones as they do every other fall. This year, they're calling them. You ready for this one? They're calling them the XS and the XR, and the XS Max. For the very big one. Gone are the number plus, number S plus, or whatever name with it this time around. Instead, they're just going with the 10 and calling it the 10S and 10R. Did you have a look at these?
You know, I did, but I'm still not compelled to switch. I mean, I haven't even had my 8 that long, and I'm still pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're at the point where these CPUs are so fast and the hardware and software optimization with them is so good that, you know, they really don't start to feel slow for a number of years. Now, you know, the XS has a 5.8-inch display, which is bigger than the size of the 8 Plus by 0.3 inches. The XS Max has a 6.5-inch display, and the XR has a 6.1-inch display. So these are all very big compared to what we have for the 8 Plus. But the catch is that these utilize the form factor of the iPhone X from last year that are tall rather than wider. So as a result of this, you have a wider phone – or sorry, a taller phone with bigger display – but it's nowhere near as wide as the 8 Plus. Do you have the 8 or the 8 Plus?
Oh, the 8 Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought that was big to begin with, but I actually like the wideness of it.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want one that was
– I don't know if I'd want to go tall.
Longer.
Though I will say that looking at the physical properties of this and comparing this, you know, I'm a huge fan of the iPhone 5 form factor, the iPhone SE. The last Steve Jobs iPhone. The iPhone XS is only 1.2 centimeters wider than that, which really isn't that much. So if you want something that's kind of like the old iPhone SE, the iPhone XS or XR is the one to look at with this. Now, I'm not going to talk about costs here because, you know, the XS starts starts at $999. Not on contract.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just progressing along that line of, you know, slowly but surely moving to the point where Apple is the Mercedes of smartphone manufacturers. I think they already were, but we're definitely here with this release. So.
Yeah, they're pricey. And like I said, I need to have a reason to switch. And
yeah.
That is what I'm missing here, because I'm sure it's – I don't even know. Like, I don't know. Is it faster? Is it better?
Yeah, of course it's going to be faster. Probably incrementally, but not, you know, a huge leap.
I was going to say, but how much faster do I need? Like, my phone already does what I want it to do when I touch the button.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not – I don't wait. Like, you're not waiting on anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, you know – one other thing with this is that they made a point to say that the iPhone XR they feel is going to be the best-selling phone, but that was not coming out until October 19th. And that's going to be the low-entry model starting at $749 US if you buy it outright. Mm-hmm. When if you consider the iPhone 7 and I believe the iPhone 8 started at $699 US.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does it work down there? Do people still buy on contract or are they buying outright these days?
No, I think it's mostly contract. I mean, who could possibly afford to buy outright? I mean, I don't know. I guess if you have that kind of money, but I ain't never had that kind of money.
Yeah.
My phone's on like a, like a lease deal. Like, okay, you just, you know, you pay like $10 a month or whatever. I mean, at the end of your contract, it's your phone, but yeah, it's kind of like a car. It's kind of like leasing a car.
Yeah.
Because they're so expensive nowadays. I mean, people just don't have that kind of like money to drop. So,
yeah. And you know, another thing with this, and I don't know if it works this way here, but in Canada, there's almost little reason nowadays to buy a phone outright, because you just go on contract with one of the major carriers. And if you want to, they have to unlock that phone so you can take it anywhere. You know, if you're going on a foreign trip, they have to unlock it for you now.
Oh, okay.
With regulations that have come in. And you know, if you want to get out of your contract, you just pay the remainder of the device, how much the device would cost. So, I mean, there's really not a reason here to buy an outright phone anymore, because you just, you know, go on a contract with one of these big carriers, and then they're going to be able to give you the phone at that lower price, and you're just going to pay part of your monthly bill on that. So,
yeah.
But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, you know, do you need a new phone? If you need a new phone, you're going to get the iPhone XS. Or if you're wanting a more budget model, you're going to get the XR. The difference between the XS and the XR really just comes down to the fact that the XR is bigger than the XS by just a little bit. It comes in more colors. It only has one camera, so it doesn't do the dual camera thing that we've been accustomed to on the plus sizes of the phone. I'm not sure what the finish is on it exactly. I almost want to say it's not plastic. I think it's aluminum.
So does it have a front facing camera?
Oh no, they do, but it doesn't have the dual rear facing cameras, because if you look at the back of your 8 Plus and if you look at the back of a 10 or a 10S, it's got two cameras on the back.
Yeah, I don't know what they're for, but yeah.
Basically what happens with that is that when you take a picture, any picture, it takes two pictures with each of those camera lenses and then composites them together to get the best shot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So we're getting less and paying more? Yeah, that sounds about right.
No. That's on the XR. That's on the cheaper version. You're only getting one camera.
Oh, okay. But that's still more expensive than the
8
Plus when it came out. So you are paying more and getting less, right?
If you're comparing this year's version to last year's version, yes.
Was there any other way to compare it?
Oh, I was just comparing the three versions, the XS, the XS Max, and the XR.
Yeah.
And you know, with this, they also announced they announced a new watch, and that's it. That's all they announced at this event.
What are they doing with that trillions of dollars? What they're sitting on? Can't take it with you.
I have no idea.
Develop a car.
Apparently that's what's happening. But alleged. You know, we're a while away from that. And just to give you some idea here. iPhone XS outright, $1,379 Canadian, $1,519 for the XS Max. And, you know, this is largely due to the exchange rate in Canada here. Now, let's have a look at the XR with this, what the pricing is on that. $1,029 outright.
Wow. That's too much, in my opinion. It's way too much. But
yeah, and I mean, you know, I really wonder how these are going to sell in Europe, because contracts aren't a thing in Europe.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess they got more money than we do, but do they have that much more? I mean, I don't know.
I have no idea. $999, $1,099 for the XS Max in the US. So that's where they put that. And basically what we're getting at with this is that Apple's flagship phone devices are now, you know, $1,000.
Which, you know, that we've always accepted the higher price with Apple because Apple was always innovating. And that's what
And the question is,
trouble with is, where is the innovation
yes,
at?
Yes, what are you getting out of that that you don't have in the 8? You know, because, you know, it's just a different form factor, the facial recognition, a better camera, and a better CPU. And that's what we've gotten, you know, for the last 3 years since the iPhone 7, unless you got the iPhone 10. So, I don't know. But in other news, they made the watch a couple millimeters bigger, the Series 4. So it's a 44-millimeter size now. And with this, there's an even bigger screen on that. And the thing that you know, everyone's talking about, and this is only going to be available in the U.S. at the launch to begin with, is that the Apple Watch Series 4 is actually going to have an ECG sensor.
I don't know what that is.
Echocardiogram. So basically these watches.
Oh, what?
Yeah. These watches will be able to monitor the wearer and notify them if they detect an irregular heart rhythm. Starting at $399 US.
I'm sorry, Shane. The irony of this is just blowing my mind right now. So you can get a watch from Apple. It's got an echocardiogram in a country where you barely can afford health care. That is just beautiful. Beautiful.
And what's more, it'll report back to the app and you provide a printout format you can take to your doctor.
If you have one. Yeah, that'd be great. That's great. Wow. I don't even know what to say.
You know, I'm actually a little bit worried about this because it brings out a huge privacy issue too. Because you know how the insurance companies operate.
Well, yeah, that's why you have to get rid of them.
So
you don't have insurance companies up there, do you?
No.
Yeah. See, why can't we be more like Canadians?
Yeah, I mean, we do for supplemental things like dental and whatnot, but not for the
right. Stuff. It's like elective stuff, right? Like, you know, like, or cosmetic surgery, something like that. That's what you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Do, right?
Exactly.
See, that's perfectly fair. Perfectly fine. You want bigger boobs? You have to pay for them. I'm cool with that, but don't let me die from a heart attack. That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Apparently, you know, you could. Your watch could maybe save you now.
Yeah, I mean, I knew there were certain apps before that the watch used to, like monitor heart rate and stuff like that. But an echocardiogram, that's pretty sophisticated.
Yeah. They actually had – I forget the guy's name, but on stage they had the president of a heart institute in the U.S. talk about the device and how this is actually FDA approved.
Good luck getting your insurance to pay for it.
I know. and, you know, you got to ensure that the data with this now, if you live in the U.S., is safe because – you know, you could say that, oh, you had this monitoring, you can be denied for that now. So I don't know. I mean, if I was in the U.S., I honestly wouldn't use that feature, and I would just turn it off because I don't want that information being out there and taken one way or another, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, and, you know, it's a privacy issue too as well if these things are tracking every which way you go. So that's something else you got to keep in mind of. So.
Well, and especially here when anybody can basically buy, sell, do anything they want with your information. And, hey, you clicked agree, so we can do whatever the hell we want. And you can't trust that. I wouldn't trust that because eventually it's going to get around to people you don't want it to get around to.
Yeah, I agree. 40 millimeters or 44 millimeters. So, I mean, they made the a little bit bigger, but I mean, still, it's just going to be an Apple Watch. It's going to still use the same app features we've had before, you know, for forwarding notifications and the like. And once again, there's really nothing that revolutionary here aside from the ECG sensor.
Yeah. I don't know.
In somewhat sad news, the iPhone SE was discontinued with this release, so you can't get that small iPhone anymore, which was a really good low entry price point for it. $499, I believe, in Canada, $399 in the US outright, which is basically nothing if you go on a carrier.
Yeah. Well, don't want to give people a bargain now, do you? Yeah.
I miss that device.
I never had one, so. Yeah.
Well, I had a 5S, and that's the same form factor, so.
Okay.
iOS 12 will launch on September 17th. macOS Mojave, September 24th. WatchOS 5, I'm assuming, also going to come on the 17th as well. So, we'll definitely be watching for those and seeing if there's any issues with those releases. So,
right.
All right. That's the Apple event. So moving on to the next piece of news, and that's Microsoft's Patch Tuesday. And, you know, it's the second Tuesday of the month where various things do get patched in Windows. And I have to tell everyone this week that you definitely do want to run those Windows updates this week, because if you don't, you're putting yourself in danger in many, many ways. You see this, if you're watching this video here, I'm scrolling through a list of all these updates. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 vulnerabilities that are patched in this week's Patch Tuesday update. 16. So, yeah, you definitely want to run those Windows updates. And perhaps one of the biggest ones that I can highlight to people on the internet is a Windows Remote Code vulnerability, which basically would allow an attacker who is not at your system to gain control of your Windows operating system. And this affects all Windows versions from Windows 10 and Windows Server, and basically would allow them to create a malicious image file that would execute code when opened.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't really seen malicious image files since the days of Windows XP.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a while. That used to be the whole email thing, right?
Yes, like, you get a
don't open the attachment.
Right, or you get a maliciously formed email, and it would just take over because it would download that image right away. So it's definitely something that hasn't been on our mind, but it's here as well. There's also ones with malicious fonts. So, you know, this is just a good reminder to everyone that you want to keep your Windows up to date and run your operating system updates this week if you're going to run them at all. And you should definitely run them every month, but definitely get those out of the way right now, sooner rather than later, because if these start being executed on the internet, that would be very, very bad.
And oh, yeah.
Same thing also for your web browsers. You know, if you're using Chrome, using Firefox, make sure they're set to auto update and install those updates as soon as they arrive, because you're likely to see an image on the web. So that's going to be the first point of entry for these. And if you use Edge, you're also going to want to run the Windows updates as well, just to ensure that you have all these. But really big Windows security vulnerabilities that were patched this week. So please do, everyone out there, be sure to run your Windows updates this week.
Yeah. I know I saw mine running when I went to shut the computer down the other day. Yeah. So yeah.
Run the Windows updates. All right. Our last piece of tech news comes from the European Union once again. They're on the crusade against memes. But the first one, well, I know the meme one is funny, but the first one is what they're calling the link tax. And this is basically designed to allow publishers to require large sites to pay them for a fee. So think Reddit, Dig, in order to link to them. So The Guardian or New York Times, if they were operating in the EU with this law, would essentially be able to say that if a link comes in from Reddit, Dig, or Google News, they would be allowed to ask for a portion of the pie. The revenue that's generated from that. And that was passed this week. So that's going to be interesting to see how all these companies react to it. Because when was the last time we heard of revenue sharing on web online? Never.
You know, out of all the things that they could have went after, I don't get this one.
Yep.
I don't. I mean, it's just a link. Like, how, why, what did that other company do to, for
this
any of that?
This is basically a shot at Google and all those other large news websites that, you know, link to New York Times and whatnot, but they take the ad revenue because they, you know, showcase a large portion of the story there. When in reality, you know, we saw this shift happen in the mid-2000s where people started focusing on, you know, aggregators rather than going to actual websites. And, you know, this is, you know, treating a symptom and not the cause. And, you know, I think this really reeks of legislators who don't know what's going on making legislation here. And that's just horrible. So
yeah, well, and I'm sure they have been – well, it's EU, so it's not like it's not like here where you can just – give as much money as you want, but I mean, it seems like it would benefit those particular news agencies, and what they really should be doing is looking at antitrust. I mean, isn't that the elephant in the room? That's what it really is about. Like,
apparently Wikipedia is going to have an exemption on this because Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales had a case of strong opposition against this, and that's, of course, because Wikipedia is crowdfunded. So the second law basically is the meme ban, and basically – this is described as an upload filter, a requirement for major websites and social networks to create a database of copyrighted content against which any new upload of text, videos, and images would be checked.
That's just bullshit. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. I don't agree with it at all.
You know, I mean, you're not going to stop this. You're going to be playing whack-a-mole if you do this. And, you know, this is just like when piracy first came around and people started, you know, sharing videos and MP3s and whatnot. And it finally took until you get something like Netflix or subscription-based music to finally nip it in the bud. So.
Well, and it doesn't – like taking a picture and then adding like something funny, like what – I don't know. I mean, how are you making money off memes? Number one, you're not. I don't see how you're making anything. That's just something you pass around with your friends, like joking around about.
They said EU copyright law already has weaker exemptions for fair use and parody than its US counterpart. And so the extension of these filters and simpler versions of which already exist on YouTube will serve to restrict lots of content on the internet, potentially including GIFs and memes. So basically they're saying that, hey, we have less fair use protection than the US. That's why we're doing it.
Here's a stock tip. If you're in Europe, invest in some VPNs.
Oh, yeah. To go on. Yep, VPNs are very popular. You know, in the UK, it's not uncommon for ISPs to track lists of websites that you visit.
It's unfortunate. I mean, we're watched here, but we're watched by corporations.
And many of the corporations doing the watching are put forward by the people using those social networks and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It just seems like we can't win with this. Like, the internet is becoming less and less free every day.
Yeah, well, you know, I almost feel like that's – the minute that the little guy could find a way to make a living, that's when we can't have that shit.
Yeah. Just look at, you know, YouTube demonetization and whatnot. I don't know.
Yeah. No, YouTube's a perfect example. I mean – YouTube really bothers me because I watch it more than any television at all. Like, you know, YouTube is what I watch. But at the same time, I hate their business practices. I hate it. But that's where the content is, or that's where the content I want to see is. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't want to be a creator right now. It's really not right. But
yeah, well, try combating ad block.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's why we have the Patreon page. All right. That's it for tech news. Moving on to skill of the month. You know, I am actually getting started with this farming skill of the month. I'm currently in fifth. I've gained 1.1 million XP. Sorensen 57 has gained 11.7. Poison Nova with 3.9. And One Stone Pwn with 1.9. That shouldn't be too hard to catch up with, I don't think.
10 mil? I don't know, man. Good luck.
We'll
see. I think you can do it, but...
We'll see. You know, I chatted with Sorensen about what he was doing. He's doing one fruit tree a day. two ward runs, and AFKing. What's the creature people AFK with the Seat Aside?
Aquanites.
Aquanites. There we go.
Damn, dude, he's going in. Really, he's doing runs and Aquanites.
And I'm not going to do that because that's not real farming in my view.
Well, good luck. I mean, that dude's a beast. So, yeah, I mean, just good luck to everybody because I'm telling you, the dude's a beast.
Yeah, yeah. So, but hey, I mean, it's farming. It's been a long time since we've had a farming skill of the month, and what a month to have one. I'd like to see how this would turn out a few months later when we all have stocks of beans, you know, from the farm and whatnot.
Oh, man, yeah.
Be like a slaughter fest.
Well, if anyone can do it, Shane, I got faith in you.
Yeah, yeah. I've already unlocked four or five pieces of the Master Farmer outfit and more on the way.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, we were asked last week if it was one outfit piece or if there's multiple, but there is. I can confirm now there are multiple. For whoever asked me that, I don't know if it was in Discord or on here, but there are multiple pieces that you do need to combine. So I did one farming run and I gained enough pieces for one outfit, which was really surprising to me. One outfit piece.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
Anyways, we're going to move on to achievements this week, and there's only one of them. I think everyone's taking a bit of a break after double XP weekend.
I think so.
And that's Vodka B with 120 invention on September 9th, the longtime clan quester and really notable person in the RuneScape community. You'll know her if you've seen her. So, congratulations. All right, what do you got for pick of the week this week?
This week, I'm going to indulge in a little bit of internet drama.
Okay.
So, as you have probably heard, Eminem dropped a surprise album last week called Kamikaze, and is a really good album, but he went after everybody. he went after a lot of people. One of the people that he went after was Machine Gun Kelly, who has now released a diss track.
Who is that?
Machine Gun Kelly? Well, he is a rapper from Cleveland. So we have two Midwest rappers here that are going against each other. But his diss track actually was pretty decent. I mean, it's not the best song I've ever heard, but it's pretty decent. That's my pick of the week. It's called Rap Devil. It's a play on Eminem's Rap God. And it's actually pretty good. Here's the ironic part. So MGK, Machine Gun Kelly, is another white rapper. So here we are with a beef and a rap situation. You know, we got an East Coast, West Coast thing going on here with two white rappers. One is with Dre. One is with P. Diddy. I feel like we've seen this movie before, only different.
That was in the 90s, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, I don't know. That's really been the big story, and we're all waiting to see what Eminem is going to do. Eminem's one of the greatest of all time. Like, in just period. I love his music, and I have from the beginning. But this kid is hungry, and he's gunning for him. So, no matter what happens, I think as the audience, we are the ones that shall benefit from this. And I hope that it just doesn't get out of hand like it did in the 90s. Yeah. So that's my pick, Rap Devil.
All right.
Machine Gun Kelly.
All right. Link can be found in that show notes to that at update.rsvmb.com. Okay, Tanis, what have you been up to?
Man, I have been farming. I've been killing dragons. Well, I haven't been. Okay, so I've been farming at the farm.
Okay. Have you been farming dragons?
I just got a mail like 2 days ago. Like, it's not big enough to breed yet. That was my problem. I kept getting females. So I just now got a mail. And so, like, I couldn't get a mail Zygonaut and I couldn't get a mail dragon. And that's what I had in my medium pins. So the only thing I could get beans out of was my rabbits. And that was like, yeah. So I couldn't unlock other pins to do sheep or anything like that, or sheep or yaks, because I was running off rabbit beans. So, like, it sucked. It was a really nasty – it was a bad cycle. But hopefully we'll get that remedied now, and I'm actually going to start dipping my toe into some farming, just because I've never really...
Oh, conventional farming.
Yeah, it's never really been my, you know, it's never been something that I'm really into, but I have this idea that I want to start herb farming because I want to start collecting herbs for DXP, because I actually have a lot of room in herb lore, and a lot of my competitors do not.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If I start now, I could stand to win some competitions. So that's kind of what I'm where I'm going with that.
Okay, that's good. And, you know, if the farm made anyone want to do conventional farming again, that's good. Like I said, it's been increasing the engagement in farming since the very beginning.
Yeah, it definitely has me. Like, every time I walk by that allotment, when I'm going from the breeding stall to the other ones, I'm like, you know, I want to pull over there. Like, okay, let's do some herbs. Let's do some flowers. I don't know what you'd do with the allotment. Maybe... Yeah. I don't know.
I don't really use them. You know, if you're going all out, you use them for watermelon.
Okay.
You can use them for snape grass if you want to make prayer potions. But it's not the same XP as watermelon. So, yeah. I mean, I could go through the way all this synergizes together as well, if you'd like.
Yeah, that's...
So...
Yeah.
Basically, what you want to do for herb farming runs is you have the seven herb patches. You have Trollheim, the Wilderness, Catherby, Ardoyan, South Falador, Cruis, and Port Phasmatis.
Yes, okay.
So those are all herb patches that you have. There's seven of them. I'm pretty sure I said all seven of them, but if I missed one, you can just, you know, look them up. But there are seven of them. So... What you typically want to do for herb farming is you want to just, you know, look at the grand exchange and see which herb is going to give you the best profit output. Because, yes, you said you want to save herbs for doing herb lore with them, but there's a better way of doing this. The first thing you want to do is you want to find the herb that gives you the best profit. And most of the time that's Toadflax, because everyone's always making Cerebrews and everyone's always making Super Cerebrews. And there's just so many Toadflax seeds out there that they're really cheap to get. So I just do toad flax regardless of it, unless I'm going, you know, to just, you know, need a specific amount of herbs for something and I don't want to buy them. You know, like if I'm going to make some overloads, I'll do a few runs of Torstal just to get some Torstals in there. But you just do toad flax because the seeds are so cheap. The herbs always go for a profit. And the way the herb farming works is that on average, if you factor in, you know, the magic secateurs and all the little updates that you get along the way, the green fingers aura, the juju potion. And now if you really, really wanted to from your dragon's ultra compost to increase the yields even more, the average before this was seven herbs per patch. And this includes dead ones over an entire run. And that's probably gone up a bit more with that was what it was with six before the wilderness patch came in, but it's probably gone up. So if you just take an average of seven herbs per patch and you multiply the clean herb price by seven, and if that price is worth more than one single seed, you're going to make a profit on that allotment. Then you multiply that profit that you make on that one herb patch by seven, and there you can start to see how much money you're going to be pulling out of the herb farming. And this is what makes herb farming so lucrative, and why I say just focus on one herb, toad flax, unless it were to crash for some reason, because you can sell these toad flax all the time, and you can sell them at a profit. You know, even if you have one or two patches dead. Like, for example, the price of a toad flax seed right now is 3,400 GP, 3,413. But the price of a clean toad flax is 4,819. So if you multiply that by seven, you're bringing in 33.7K profit per herb patch. Or sorry, 33.7K revenue per herb patch. Then if you subtract the 3,417 from that, that's 30K profit right there from one herb patch. So 30K profit from one herb patch, multiply that by seven, 212 profit. Do that five times a day, which is probably the max amount you can fit in. And this is, you know, what I used to do when I really would go hardcore with it. You know, that's 1 million profit a day just from herb farming.
Total flocks. Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, you could, you know, then take this and buy other herbs and other secondaries rather than just going out and farming all the individual herbs. I feel that this is just a much more better way of going about it. And then you could also divert those back into wood and fruit trees as well. That's what I did when I was going for 120 farming. And as a result, 120 farming was effectively revenue neutral.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So, yeah. Okay. And basically what you want to do when you go on these herb runs is you want your Ardoin cape from the task set to teleport to the farm. You want your elf teleport crystal. You want your wilderness sword. You want your cabbage ring. You want your ectophial to get to that one. And if you have the lunar spell unlocked, you can go lunars and teleport directly to Trollheim. I don't do that. I just teleport to Trollheim, run up there, start the potion, start the aura right up at top, and then I can get back to Cruis. That's where I end normally, and finish that herb run in under 5 minutes.
Is that the same as the tab, the Trollheim tab, or is that different?
Yeah, that's the same as the tab. The Trollheim tab will teleport you up to the top of the mountain.
Okay. All right.
The exact – I don't know what the exact one is called in the Lunar spell book, but that puts you right up top by the farming patch. So that one is better if you want to use Lunars. You could use Lunars because the way I do the Catherby one is through Lodestone. So I don't use any conventional teleports in this run except for the Trollheim one. So you could very well do this on Lunars.
Okay.
Another thing you want to do is you definitely want to use Super Compost. Another reason to do it on Lunars is you can use the Fertile Soil spell if you want. But personally, because of all the farming I've done, I had watermelons coming out of my ears, coconut shells coming out of my ears. And as we learned last week, I make all my own super compost.
Yeah. Nah, that's farming.
And I have in my bank, I have 4,400 empty plant pots. Because I just keep them after the run. They're kind of a count of what I did.
Oh, okay. I have mine set to like they just disappear when I
keep them. I keep them, and I keep the buckets too, because you can reuse those buckets for picking up the dragon manure and whatnot, and building ultra compost. So.
Oh well, maybe I should reset that then.
Yeah, you definitely want to keep your buckets. You can get rid of the plant pots if you don't want them, but definitely keep the buckets.
Okay.
Any other questions on how that works?
No, that was exactly what I wanted to know, because I wasn't sure about what teleports to use and what order to go in.
You definitely want the biggest things that, you know, can take it from a good run to a superb run is the Green Fingers Aura and the Juju Potion. You definitely want those two things.
Okay. Good deal.
I would be, you know, bringing in a lot less if I didn't have either of those. And my all-time record for herbs brought in on a single run is 112.
Yeah.
And 112 nice. Toad flax at the current price, 48.14, 539K from one run.
Wow.
Revenue minus 7 seeds, so 548K. So yeah, 520K, 515K profit from one run at today's value if that were to happen today.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and then you can just, you know, throw them back into whatever you do. And, you know, if you're doing wood trees, you just do 2 wood a day and, you know, 1 fruit a day. And then I don't protect those because the protection costs are too much. I've just started using ultra compost on those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's that. But as for me this week, you know, just doing the farm stuff and whatnot, trying to get to a point where I have a new baby dragon every day and then turn them all in for beans, unlock everything. And I'm going to be going for beans for the foreseeable future because I want that master farmer title.
Yeah, that'll be cool. You definitely should have it, Shane.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, anyone who sees me in game knows I run around with the ultimate quester, but I think the master farmer can finally displace that.
As so. It should.
But yeah, I think that's about it. I don't have anything else to say for this week's episode.
Nope.
Just been doing a bit of farming here and there, so that's always fun. Don't want to hit 200 mil, though. That's bad.
That would be bad.
Yeah.
That would be bad. So. You'd have to do it for fun.
Anyways, if you guys want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. If you want to chat with us in-game, we're at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And you can follow what we're doing on Twitter at rsbnb. And if you guys are listening to this before Saturday afternoon at 6 p.m. Eastern, we are going to be venturing over to the Max Guild. I'm going to unfurl the last few flags, and I'm going to take my walk into the Max Guild and buy a Max Cape.
Woo!
So,
what time was that, Shane?
6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday the... What day is Saturday going to be? Saturday the 15th.
Okay, so right after our town hall.
Yeah, Patreon town hall is happening that day too if you happen to be a Patreon subscriber and you're listening on Friday, but I've already posted that in places for the patrons to see where they can
do that. Great. So, good deal.
I believe that's it. So with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Take care.